Okay, the second aliyah of Chayisara is, surprise, fascinating. Many major themes that we get to see in this aliyah. In some ways, a continuation of the first aliyah. In some ways, a continuation of last week's parsha. And a very crucial step, once again, in the development of the nation of Am Yisrael. So to jump right into it, so here the first aliyah has told us about the efforts to purchase Maaret HaMachpelah for the burial of Sarah, and here this aliyah starts, V'yakam Ste Efron Asher Machpelah, Asher Lefnei Mamre, Hasade V'Hamayra Asher Bo, V'Chalait Asher Basade, Asher Bechol Gvul Osaviv. So here the field that Avram purchased was now put into his Rishos, and V'yakam, it's established within his property. Rashi writes, Tekuma Haisolo, Shiyot, Temiad Hedyot, Liad Melech. And that this idea of it rising up represents the notion that it gets a new status now as the property of a melech, the property of a regal individual such as Avram. That transference is very significant. It's important to point out, maybe to contrast, what we find here is that there's a lot of maybe confusion that rises from the fact that the laws of Kiddushin, at least in their source, are derived from this parsha, not yet the Shidduch part that we'll talk about soon, but the Kinyan Kiddushin is derived from this part of the parsha, from the, both of which are, both types of Kiddushin and marriage issues are addressed maybe in our Aliyah, but here talk about the Kinyan Kiddushin, so the idea of Akicha, Yalef Kicha Kicha Miste Ephron. The Gemara tells us in the very beginning of Kiddushin that we know that what is effective for creating a marriage, a Kenyan, is derived from this process that Avram undergoes in order to acquire Maaret HaMachpelah. And it creates a lot of confusion and a lot of upsetness sometimes because there's the impression that in Halacha, the man acquires his wife, he purchases his wife, and that's what we see from how the whole derivation comes. And that's not really a correct understanding, that even though it looks like that, and even though that's how the Mishnah perhaps makes us think when it starts off, Aisha Nikne, the woman is acquired, it's not really how we should translate it. That the idea is that what we require for Kiddushin is an expression of seriousness. The Rambam in Hilchos Ishus talks about the whole development of marriage as a concept and what Matan Torah did to create a different kind of relationship for a couple, that no longer should they just decide they're going to live together, but they have to have an expression of seriousness that precedes the physical relationship and that creates the commitment. So if we were looking for how the halacha expresses seriousness, so we look to the area of kinyanim and business, that there we find that we need to also express das, that for there to be a transference of property, there has to be some symbol of das, of commitment between the two parties, and all of the different kinyanim that we have are ways of conveying that, are ways of expressing that das. So that's the overlap here, that when it comes to the marital relationship also, there is a need to convey that seriousness. So what's the mechanism for expressing seriousness in halacha? It's the mechanism of kinyan. So we derive the kinyan from merchandise, from business, and extrapolate from there the kinyan for kedusha, but it's not the same thing. There isn't an acquisition on the isha, and that's an important point to emphasize. And there are many halachic proofs to this, which the time's not going to allow us to go through, just to mention one or two. The Rishonim note that we only have a limited number of kinyanim that work for Kiddushin, and there are many other kinyanim that maybe you might think we could bring over from the world of business. So, for example, what about a kinyan hagbar or a kinyan meshicha? You could lift up the isha, you could carry her over the threshold, you could bring her into your household. Why don't we say that there should be such a kinyan as effective in the area of Kiddushin? That's a question some of the Rishonim bring up in the beginning of the Maseches Kiddushin. And some of the Rishonim answer. The Rashba talks about this, so let's talk about this. This is a comparison. It is not really appropriate because when you do a Kenyan Hagbar, Mashicha, on an object, it's the object that you're purchasing. So therefore, you can lift that up, you can bring it into your house. But in the context of Kedushin, you're not being Kona the Isha. She's not the Dover HaNiknes in that sense. You're being Kona the relationship. So the relationship is expressed through the same seriousness that we find in the world of business, but it's not the same thing. And we shouldn't have a confusion about how that's meant to express itself. So there is this superficial derivation of Kenyan from Saffron, but we should understand the differences. And perhaps, it might be suggested, the Sefer Ma'oris Yitzchak, which is written by an acquaintance of mine, Rabbi Edeltalk, I think I've mentioned in the recent past, is coming out with a new volume now. I'll mention him a few times this morning. He has a lot to say about this Aliyah. Some very interesting things. So in the Ma'oris Yitzchak, he notes also from, quoting from Rav Shimon Shkaf, in his Kiddushim and his Shirim to Kiddushim, the difference between Kinyan Kiddushim and other Kinyanim, that here, in this case, there is a status change of the object, that the object is purchased. And that's perhaps what the Pasuk is conveying to us here, that the Sada has now changed. The Sada Vayakam Se'efram, the Sada has moved over. It's also noteworthy that as far as the Kinyanim go, the Meshech Chachma over here points out that what exactly the Kenyan for Bnei Noach is a little bit a matter of question. When you have a Kenyan between a Yisrael and an Akum, what exactly is effective? It's not so clear that Kesef that we see here is actually effective as a Kenyan. So what Kesef does, perhaps as he explains, is it makes it leave the Rishus of the Akum as a status of Hefker, but then requires, it gives a little bit of synergy to our whole Bittul discussion, if that's a stretch a little bit, but that it therefore still remains for Avram to be Kona Minahefker with a Chazaka. So this idea of Vayakam, the Meshech Chachma understands, is that to express that extra stage in the Kenyan. We find, there's an essay about this in the Sefer Chavetzelos HaShar and Al HaTorah, that here the purchase is from Ephraim, but we still find that there has to be negotiations with the Bnei Chesh. So what exactly is that negotiation about? So what's their role in this whole purchase? So the notes, there's two things. So one, as Gemara and Baba Basra and Daf Chafei tells us that they were involved in the whole issue of not just the ownership of the property, but whether you can put a kever there. Rav Shechter points out that this parsha is really the source for zoning laws. Zoning laws, min ha-Torah minayin, how do you know that there is a basis and a justification for zoning laws? We find it here in the parsha that Avram is not only purchasing property, but there's still a question of what he's allowed to do with the property that he owns. Let's see what we find in zoning laws, that the community, that the government, the municipality, can tell you what you are or are not allowed to do, even with property that is yours. So not only did he have to purchase the property from Ephraim, but he also had to get permission to put a kever there, which is not so pasha. Try doing that in a municipality anywhere else to see that it's not something that you're just automatically entitled to do. So that was part of what he had to deal with him about. Now, you might say that, well, what about other mechava already buried there? So he wasn't really changing that system. So for the Tshuva, where he writes that he thinks they must not have known that. So they thought this was a new use to put a kever there, and that was part of what they have to deal with. And also there's a concept of bar metra, which normally rules that when you sell property, so the property has to first be offered to the closest, to those who might be adjacent to the land who can benefit more. So to have an outsider come in and buy the land is also something that is not without other people involved, not without other people interested. So here that's going to be also part of the discussion. And we also find that it makes a difference if the outside purchaser is willing to pay much more. So then that shifts the balance here. So the fact that there is a emphasis on how much is being paid for this property within the earshot of the Bnei Chais is also a part of it. Okay, so fine, the pasuk continues in the same La'avim L'mikne L'einei Bnei Chais L'chol V'dei L'chol Boi Shari'iro, that's what we're just talking about. that they were involved. The Achrichein, Chaver Avram, Mitzvah Ishto, Amarat, Stea Machpela, Opne Mamre, Hu Chavron, Beres Kinan. So here he buries Sarah. And as Naim Latoira points out, that Utkarav points out that here we know that Avram had tremendous cover for Sarah. We hear throughout. This is really the first thing that we hear that he bought for her, the kever, and he suggests that this is here to emphasize the belief in the Hasharat HaNefesh. It's also interesting that this chesed overall gets particular attention in the Medrash, that when Avram did this act of burying his wife, so the Medrash tells us that the Kodesh Baruch Hu declared, oh, by engaging in this chesed, Tafasta Sumanosai, now I see that you really understand my profession, you really understand my task in life, the idea of chesed, you're doing that, I see you really get it. And that's probably surprising to all of us, because we know that Avram is long established as a person of chesed, and we spent a lot of time last week talking about that, about the fact that Avram was the master and the teacher of chesed. So now Davka, when he does kvura for his wife, what any person would do, the idea that somebody would bring his own spouse to burial is pretty standard and a minimum that would be expected of a spouse. So that's all of a sudden the proof that Avram is a Baal Chesed, Tafasta, some of those by that. This reflects the fact that now we see that he gets it. What about everything we knew till now and everything we discussed last week, where it was very clear that that was the essence of Avram in ways that are more extreme? So there are some who point out a couple of observations here. Rashiv Karambiavner of Goldzich suggested that maybe it's a focus on Kfura. That's the part that's significant in light of what we spoke about this morning. And we spoke about a little synergy. We talked about in the Avos Chesed, the idea of Kvura being a Chesed Shel Emes, being a Chesed which is separate from any kind of social contract, because it's not like other types of Chesed, then we might think, okay, I'll take care of you, you take care of me. Here, the recipient's not going to be able to pay it back at all, so the notion of it being a Chesed Shel Emes, maybe it's Davka that Chesed that attracts this attention, where Kodesh Baruch Hu makes this declaration. Another possibility, Alter of Slobodka made reference to, is the idea that Chesed starts at home, that when it comes to priorities within Chesed, so it's a little bit counter to the instinct. We're often more impressed when people go very far to give kindness to those who are at a great distance and to show that type of attention to people who are very far from their immediate orbit. And the truth is, while that is a great expression of chesed, but there's a system of priorities, and we say that in the Yircha Kodman, and we say that the family is the closest of all. So Alfi Halacha, really the priority of chesed should be given to those who are closest, and especially close family members. And the attention is often the other way, that the people who are more extreme to go far away and to be involved with people who are not so close to them, they get more of the focus and they get more of the emphasis. So here the idea that he's not only expressing chesed to strangers who show up outside his tent, but he's expressing chesed to the one closest to him in the world, that is the highest priority in chesed, so it's important to emphasize just how significant that is. This whole reference of this focusing that it was in Hebron and Eretz Canaan, all of that, Ibn Ezra writes that this is to show the chashivus of Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban explains that the whole story here and all of the emphasis is really just to express how much this is one of the nisyonos of Avram Avinu, that he had such a hard time in burying Sarah. That's something that the psukim here are going at length to highlight. And indeed, the Gemara and Baba Basra and the Sanhedrin do mention this whole parsha of getting a kever for Sarah as one of the nisyonos of Avram Avinu, although it's not counted in the Avos Reb Nachman where there's a list over there, but seems to be something significant in his development, whether it's counted as one of the nisyonos or not. And for Simcha Zifflavroid, in the Sefer Salm Derech, so he notes that the theme of many of the nisyonos are basically conflicts, spheres, that put things in opposition to each other and require some kind of a special attitude to be able to resolve. We spoke last week a little bit. The Akedah was a conflict. I think we mentioned this last week, even though it wasn't the Aliyah we were focused on. But when it came to the Akedah, so here you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu promising that you're going to have a lot of descendants coming specifically from this child, and yet he's also told, apparently, to kill this child, so to find a Muna within that spirit, to believe that there's going to be a Kiyum to God's promise, despite the apparent impossibility. So that was one of the aspects of that Nisayan. And here we have, again, a great tension, that here Sarah is the Tzadekes, and she ends up dying because of the Akedah. We have a tradition that impacted my father, Zichron Lebracha, had a practice, was always made a roshim on me, that when he would go to a funeral or a shiva, that he would always be careful if somebody would ask him, whose funeral is it, whose shiva is it? So he'd always say, the mother of Plony, the brother of Plony. He would never say Plony's brother or Plony's mother, because he explained to us that in the milliseconds between saying Plony and Plony's mother, that the person has a chalisha sadas, because they think that that younger individual is the one who passed away, and they have to wait till the end of the sentence when you say that it's Plony's mother, and they find out that it's the older person. It's also sad, but it's not the same type of tragedy. So they have a chalisha sadas that's unnecessary, and he would cite as the source for that what Chazal tell us, that Sarah died because a satan appeared to her after the Akedah and gave her the news, so to speak, and told her that Yitzchak nishchat kemat, that Yitzchak was shechted, almost. And the space between shechted and almost, she had such a chalisha sadas, she collapsed and died. So if you're not careful in how you phrase your sentences, you can impose a lot of emotional pain that is unnecessary. And you see that all the more so nowadays. I see some pretty egregious examples of this, because there are emails that inform about Petiros, and they'll be phrased that the Baruch Dayan MS, so-and-so's mother, so-and-so's grandfather, and the email subject will get cut off. So before you have a chance to open it, you just see the top, Baruch Dayan MS, so-and-so. It's really not the way to do things. People need to be much more careful about that. So apparently that caused the death of Sarah, delivering the news in such a way. And so here you really find a challenge to the Amunah. But here Avram is told to bring Yitzchak to the Akedah, and he does everything right, and he passes with flying colors. And as a result, Sarah dies. And Sarah dies, and now he can't even bury her in the land that he's promised. That's his whole Yerusha here, and he's being given a hard time about that. So can you find the chesed within all of those fears, within all of those conflicts? Can you find that there's still a chesed within that? That is a part of the nisayon of this experience. So then the pasuk continues now to tell us about a new stage here. So, right, so I could continue a little bit. The Yakma Sadamai Rashi Bola Avram, the Chutz of Kaver, the Yis Nechais, the Neperek, the Avram Zakein Babi Yamin, the Hashem Berach is Avram Bakal. So Avram was old, he was Bavi Yamim, and he was blessed with everything. So first of all, what does Bavi Yamim mean? And what does it mean to be called old? So Bavi Yamim is a phrase that refers to one's great accomplishment. And as some of the Svarim explain, the Maris Yitzchak has about this also, that this is a remez to the idea that the Ramchal has in the Derech Hashem, that if you waste one day, then you lose that day. You don't have the spiritual hashpah of that day. You're not able to incorporate into yourself what that day could have been for you. So Avram, he never wasted any time. He made use of every day, of every opportunity that he had. So he was Bavi Yamim. He came with the weight and the value of all of the days that he lived. And that here that he's called old, so the Paneach Razus from the Bali Atosus, he observed that it's right after Sarah dies that it's called old. And the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Pei Zayin notes that people would confuse him with Yitzchak, because back then There was they didn't have aging that appeared physically. Older people looked the same as younger people, and he would often be confused with Yitzchak. People wouldn't realize that one was the father and one was the son. So therefore, Hashem changed the experience, changed the appearance of older people. He should look visibly older. People should be able to tell the difference between Avram and Yitzchak. Now, I think everybody's very grateful for that, that there is this special chesed that older people to look older. But in any event, so the Torah Tmima notes that this is not the first time in the Torah that he's called old. He's called old before this. So why is this observation davka now? So he suggests that maybe there's two dinim. One is in actually being old. And here it's to say that now that he actually looks old. So if that's the case, so maybe you could also suggest that one is combined with the other, that the appearance of looking old is also a effect of everything that he's gone through. So Davka, after Sarah dying, and with this great suffering that's been associated with this whole episode and this whole cluster of episodes, so he looks old. And that's also where Chazal makes his comment, that that was for a reason as well. And that's also, as the Netziv points out, that this is perhaps also relevant because we need to understand why he isn't involved in the Shidduch of Yitzchak himself. He's about to give that mission to find the Shidduch of Yitzchak. How come he doesn't do that himself? So that may also be a function of his advanced age, as well as the idea of being blessed by Kol. So it's a comment that's also probably relevant, that because he was involved with everything, he was blessed with everything, so he was busy. He couldn't go out and look for a Shidduch himself, so he had to delegate that mission. The Sefer Meresh Bibira is written by another Talmid Chacham whom I'm privileged to be acquainted with, Shmayahu Shulman Shlita, and he notes also the idea of being blessed with everything, with Ashiris, presumably, is a reference to the idea that's expressed in the fourth paragraph of Perkei Avos, where the Mishnah says that whoever is the Kayim, the Torah, and the Anius, is Zochet, to the Kayim, and Ashiris at all, as well. So here, Avram, who passed all of these nisyonos, and now he has the nisayon of Ashiris. He has all of the challenges that come with wealth. So there's a lot of interpretation to this idea of makol. So the Ramban writes over here that there's some deep sod that Hashem has that's called makol, and that's what we're talking about. Ravan Kotler had in one of his sichos printed in the Sefer Mishnas Rabbi Aaron that the greatest madrega is midas ha-stapkus, the feeling that you really have hakol and your mamish don't need any more. It's even more than sameach lechelko, where you just are able to be happy with what you have, but you really have the sense of mamish having everything, which you might call serenity, and feeling complete. And the Rambam, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, in a few places, so he understands the midah of Ayin Tova, being able to see things with a very positive perspective, that is part of the idea of being the Talmidei Avraham Avinu. The Gemara in Masechet Bava Basra, a few places, has a interesting machlokas here between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. It's actually a question of girsos, so who says what. There's different girsos which arrange the two opinions differently. But the machlokas is a little unusual. According to one opinion, Bakol means to say that he had a daughter. And we know about his sons. We don't know explicitly about the daughters. So this tells us that he was complete. He had sons and daughters, or at least a daughter. And according to the other opinion, it means he didn't have a daughter. So why is that considered to be a bracha to not have a daughter? I can definitely vouch. It's a wonderful thing to have daughters. So the idea could be, some of the Rishonim suggest, that we see how hard it was to find a Shidduch for Yitzchak. If he had to find a Shidduch for his daughter also, that would have been a tremendous challenge. That would have been even harder. So it's a little hard to understand that opinion one way or another. It's also halachically difficult because Sefer Gvuras Yitzchak discussed, it's rather discussed, what about the mitzvah Puravu, which would have required having a boy and a girl. So even if it wasn't his fault, still it's not something to consider a bracha. So there's a lot of discussion about what that could mean. The easier view to understand is the other opinion of the Gemara, that it means he did have a daughter, so he was complete in that sense as well. And that's what we mean to say, that he was blessed with everything. So then he now needs to work on the next generation. So he needs to find a shidduch for Yitzchak. So the next pasuk tells us, "Vayomer Avraham el Avdo, Zekan Beso, Hamosha b'chol shelo, Simno Yadcho tachet derechi." So he delegates this mission of finding a shidduch for Yitzchak. So who does he delegate to? So he delegates to Eliezer, right? But how do you know that? Because the Torah doesn't identify him. And it's really quite striking because he's not identified here. And he is the star of this parsha in a lot of ways. He is definitely one of the heroes, one of the main characters of this parsha. And he is not identified anywhere in Parshas Chayisar. He's not identified so much elsewhere in the Torah either. There's a couple of times where he's given just a reference to the allusion without actually mentioning his name Eliezer. But here, even more blatantly, in this whole parsha where he plays such a prominent role, so he's never identified by name, which is very striking why that is. So there's an interesting sefer, the contemporary sefer called Sheish Mashar, which discusses themes in the parsha, and he suggests that there is a whole backstory here that Eliezer had to fix something. And this we also know, Chazal tell us, and this is also kind of striking, that Eliezer had a conflict of interest in this mission, and he gets a pretty unexpected response that he has a conflict of interest because he is maybe hoping that he's not going to find a shidduch where Avram sends him, because he also had a daughter, and he wanted his daughter to marry Yitzchak. And very surprisingly, considering all the elements here, Avram apparently tells him that, no, it can't be, we're not compatible, because you're Arur, you are from the tradition of Canaan, and you are cursed, and I am Baruch, and it's not compatible. Shidduch Arur and Baruch cannot be joined together. So it's a pretty hurtful response, one would imagine, and it has to have a greater explanation to it. So there is a number of comments that can be made about this, but in the Sefer Imei Sheish Mashar, he observes that here Eliezer, so what is his yichus? He was descended from Nimrod. Either he was the son, as some have it, or maybe the grandson of Nimrod, and Nimrod represents certain self-focus, a certain egoism, and that Eliezer, who indeed is certainly looking to go in the right direction, is a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, but he had a lot of tikkun to do, a lot of repair to do in the area of chesed and being able to focus outward. And therefore, this mission is about that in terms of finding a balas chesed, which is a whole discussion of itself, but also that his role is completely sublimated as far as any personal benefit or any personal attention. So even though ultimately the understanding presumably is that through this mission, he actually does extricate himself from this Arur status. He does earn his place as Baruch and not Arur, but it still doesn't make the Shidduch work, because any kind of conflict of interest, any kind of personal benefit for him or his family from this situation would be in contradiction to the goal, which is really, or to the side goal as far as his involvement, really cleaning him of any aspect of this self-focus that was the tradition of Nimrod and moving towards the external focus that is the tradition of Avraham Avinu. So for that reason, he suggests also, that's why his name is not mentioned. He's completely behind the scenes. He's completely sublimated, and it's really striking also in contrast to Ephraim, who gets his name mentioned, even though he's certainly not the hero in the story. And yet, in a sense, that just highlights the point that Eliezer is not only the hero, but he does so in a self-sacrificing way, and that's a part of the mission, and that is also something that brings about its own results of moving him personally to a different status through the personal growth that he experiences throughout the parsha. So he's asked to take on this commitment, and he's told to take a shvua, the shvua on his bris milah. So here Rashi explains, on a bris milah the fisher and ishva tzarech li tol biyadu chesed shal mitzvah. If you go and see for Torah tefillin, la milah is the mitzvah rishon ala. So the Bris Milah represents a mitzvah, not just any mitzvah, but a mitzvah that involves tzar and self-sacrifice, and therefore it's appropriate. Well, you could probably also suggest that the significance of Milah is that which separates the Jews from the culture of the Avodah Zarah, and Avram was highlighting how much that was also a priority for him, that the idea of the Bris, that the covenant that the Bris Milah represents, is going to be crucial to him in this next stage of bringing about a family for Yitzchak, and maybe that was also a part of what he wanted to emphasize. Okay, so let's do a little quicker because we're out of time. But says Tim Vashbiocha by Shem Lokea Shemayim, the Lokea Aret, Ashalosika Hisha Livni, Mipnos Aknani, Ashuranosi Yoshe Bekirbo. So don't take a shidduch from here. That apparently he's not happy with the quality of the available shidduch prospects where they are. You have to go back to where I came from. So this is very interesting on a lot of levels, because if he's worried about the culture, and if he's worried about the shidduch possibilities, and he says, don't get a shidduch from here, go to my family. So his family, as we all know, were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That's the whole story about his rebellion against his father, against Terach, who was a idol merchant. So why would he say, go back to my family in order to find a shidduch? Isn't that also inappropriate, or Ovdei Avodah Zarah? So here, a number of Rishonim have a very fascinating and important comment. The Ran, his drushes, and Rebbeinu Bachya, and others, where they note that clearly Avodah Zarah is bad, but he's looking for Midos, and this is an indication that Midos are more important than theology. And in the context of Shidduchim specifically, because theology can be taught, but the Midos are internalized from the home. So therefore, when focusing on Midos, which is really 2 points. One, that Midos are the higher priority, similar to a comment that the Beis HaLevi makes in the Pesukim in the very beginning of the Torah, that it's really what Chazal seems to be saying, and Beis HaLevi just enhances it, that the Pasuk says, Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu, that God says, let us make man, and the Gemara observes that would seem to be a dangerous way to phrase things, because it sounds like it's plural. It sounds like God is saying, let us gods make man. And we give one the impression, Chalilu, that there's two gods, there's more than one God. So the truth is, it was actually just Amida Banivos, that God was Namlech B'Malachim, that he consulted with the angels as a display of modesty, but, or as an instruction of modesty. But it could be misread to suggest that there's more than one God. So apparently we're willing to take that risk. Apparently the risk of a big mistake in theology was worth it in order to teach Midos. So that's one part of the sentence here, that Midos is an even higher priority. And the other point here, that Midos are different than Hashkafa, than avoiding Avodah Zarah, because Hashkafa can be taught, but the Midos are internalized through the experience of the family, and therefore that has a greater focus on finding the right family context. Part of what Chazal tell us, that Hanos Isha Tzarech Lidok Bacha, that somebody gets married, he should check out the brother's Bakala, because the assumption is that she'll have absorbed Midos from her family environment, something which may be different nowadays, that there's much more going on outside the home, but especially Bizmanehem, when the entire influence was coming from the household structure, so that has a greater impact. So this comment of the Ran Rebbeinu Bachya is very interesting, has many implications in the area of Shidduchim, but you might be wondering that, so okay, fine, we won't worry so much about Avodah Zarah, and we will focus on Midos. But Lavan and Besuel, these are Bali Midos, who we're going to read about in the story about where he ultimately does find the Shidduch. So that's going to be a source of good Midos. It seems very difficult. So my friend the Beit Alfak mentioned before, in Sefer Ma'ariv Yitzchak, he has about 10 pages about this. There's a lot to try to explore, and you know, admittedly, it's a difficult task to try to look with a generous eye on the behavior of Rivka's family. But nonetheless, that's what he does to explain how, despite all of the problems and all of the issues that you find there, it's still reflective of some level of Midos concern that was different than what we see by the locals. And interesting discussion, because indeed it's a challenge to see that interpretation, but that's what he works on there. But the main point, if you can straighten out those issues, is this message of the Ran and the other Rishonim that the Midos is the focus, and that was what he was looking for. Okay, so we're almost out of time, so just to, because of the scheduling issue today, so just to look towards the end of the Aliyah. So you have some references here that Avram tells him that you have to go and don't bring Yitzchak there, and if she won't come back with you, then you're off the hook, but take a shuah to me that you will stick by these terms. And the Aliyah ends, Vayasam Evidus Yadot Tachas Yerach Avram Adonav Vayishavalo Al Hadavar Hazeh, and he swears to him on this matter. And here Adonav is plural, as Naim Latari suggests that Yitzchak was there also at this point, because he had to contribute to the appointment. So there is a lot to discuss, which is a way out of our time frame right now, but just to call your attention to it. So there's a lot of literature here about what exactly was Eliezer's role. Was Eliezer a shadchan, or was he a shliach l'kiddushin? So was he sent just to find the right girl and bring her back, and Yitzchak will marry her? Or was he sent to not only find the right girl, but also to carry out the kiddushin on behalf of Yitzchak? So there's a lot of literature about this, and some of the contemporary Sfarim that have a halachic focus. This is a pretty popular topic. Rav Asher Weiss says a lot about this, and other Sfarim have a lot about this, about whether Yitzchak was a shliach l'kiddushin, and therefore what halachos of shlichos l'kiddushin can be derived from this. So that there's a lot to talk about. It prompts the question here also, if indeed he was a shliach l'kiddushin. So what about the fact that it's not proper for a person, the Gemara says at the beginning of the second parak kiddushin, it's not proper to send a shliach to marry somebody on your behalf sight unseen. Maybe it won't be a pleasing shidduch. So apparently you have to assume that Yitzchak was on a different madrega. It would have been pleasing for him no matter what, but this is not necessarily the standard that the average human being would be working off of. So there's a lot of discussion as to how exactly to understand Eliezer's role and what exactly it represents. So we are unfortunately out of time to discuss it in detail, but I will direct your attention to and to some other important points about the lessons from the mission of Eliezer and its relevance also to the election season. So I spoke about this earlier in the week in the Kol Yom Rishon, so there's a recording of that, so if I can direct you there to get a few extra observations about what exactly we can see from Eliezer's mission and what that has to teach us for today. But until then, I will wish you a good day. Look forward, God willing, to see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, and you should have a day of chesed, a day of emunah, and a day of only good things. Yeshua Kach.
Ready?
Yeah, I'll just...